Welcome to Nice Ashes. I'm Nate.
And I'm Mike. So today we have a special guest by the name of Jordan. How are you doing today, Jordan?
Doing great.
So Jordan and I have gone back many, many years. We went to college together. So I believe I gave you this cigar.
Embarrassing stories of Mike in college episode.
There's embarrassing stories every time we meet, so don't have to go back that far.
Well, we could start with the college and do the highlight tour, right?
I suppose.
And this is not the same Jordan we had on a couple episodes ago. We just happen to know a lot of Jordans, so that is good. We're glad to have you on, Jordan. Mike, what are we smoking? You gave Jordan this cigar and gave me this cigar, and it's beefy, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're going to smoke today the CAO L'Anniversary Cameroon Toro, which I'm sad to say is rated 92 by Cigar Aficionado. And I was really excited for that, but now I'm not.
Well, regardless of what Cigar Aficionado rates or doesn't rate it, CAOs are statistically fairly good.
Yeah, and this is, so it's got an African Cameroon wrapper with a Nicaraguan filler, and it's the 30th anniversary cigar for CAO.
Nice. And the Toro is what, one size up from the Robusto, which is our typical size we do on the show, right?
Yes. And the Robusto was, or not the Robusto, the Toro was the one that was rated, so.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Have either of you had this cigar before?
Nope, I have not. Have you?
I have not either. I did get a quarter of a box, and I gave one to you and one to Nate, and I have not smoked any. I've saved them.
So I actually have, because it came in my sample pack with my new humidor, but I had it, the humidity was a little dry, and that was back on Independence Day.
Oh, there we go. I think that's how we got ours, too, is a sampler pack, because we have a Robusto to smoke as well.
Yes, and Independence Day is the one holiday that a majority of the countries around the globe celebrate from Great Britain.
Fun fact, indeed.
Yes, and this is a box press, if my fingers and eyes do not deceive me, Mike.
It is a box press, which I'm always a sucker for a box press, so.
Yes, you can set it down and it won't roll away on you. First few puffs are quite nice, I think. Got a fair amount of spice. And
it is nice. Very nice so far.
What kind of cut do you do on yours, Jordan?
So I have been doing a V-cut most of the summer, but I did a straight cut. Is that the correct term?
Yeah, I believe so.
The traditional.
Mike converted me over to a V-cut, and I just haven't gone back.
It's drawing really nice with a straight cut.
So as is tradition, the guest gets to choose the topics. So what are we talking about today, Jordan?
All right. Well, I have a smattering of potential topics, but first one I'd like to go through is, so we got about three. If we don't get to them all, great. If we don't, we don't. First one I'd like to talk about is a mental health journey that I've undergone in the last 9 months, and then possibly some politics, taxes, and a hunting trip I just went on with our friend Drunk Scott.
I like Scott already.
I guess I'll kick it off. I don't want this to be a downer, but I think I alluded to some of this in the past, Mike, but my job and my life was very stressful over the last 4 years, and I realized that I needed some help. So I went to the clinic, and long story short, I got diagnosed with depression and anxiety, which is pretty common with people. But it's not about that. I want to talk about my experiences with the system and how there's things I didn't know and I wish we learned when we were kids about how all this stuff works.
Okay, sure.
So, I mean, just to do a soliloquy here, do you want to kick in or what do you want? How do you guys want to run the show?
Oh, it's mostly just, as if we were all sitting together around a campfire or something, smoking a cigar and the thoughts we have. Gotcha. and the things that we do. We did do a Men's Mental Health Month episode where it was mostly based on statistics and not so much inner workings of it. So I believe Mike and I should have enough statistical knowledge to be able to chime in and talk. You don't feel like you're monologuing or anything. We're here, yeah. We're listening. So
yeah, well, let's keep talking then. So yeah, long story short, I'm doing good, doing great, getting better. So things are definitely looking up. Don't worry about me. But you know, there's things that what I experienced with it was I complained. Life doesn't make sense. Things don't make sense. Things are difficult, unreasonable. I had some very toxic people I had to deal with. At work, yeah, specifically. Yeah,
I think that's like the definition of work. I mean, not to poke fun at it, but I don't think jobs are healthy places by and large.
No, I found that out. So long story short, I'm still working in that same environment, but some of the factors have changed, you know, because it's like, well, you can always shop for a new place to work, but do you believe in the work you're doing? you know, and I took on a management role the last few years here. That's been a struggle all of its own, but getting that figured out too. So yeah, basically what I like to say to anybody that may listen to this or may look into it is check it out, go to the doctor. And I found the process shrouded in mystery for no reason. You know, I went in, you know, you start off with your primary and whatever, and they try to get you on pills and whatever. And I go, no, I'm not taking freaking mind altering drugs. Are you crazy?
Yeah.
You know,
I think it's unfortunate that it seems that even for not mental health, but other things, they try and push pills first and other solutions only if you object to taking pills all the time. I think the same is true for like high blood pressure, where they want you to take pills, which I guess in some instances might be necessary, but then they just give you the pills and don't tell you to go do exercise or change your diet. They just say, oh, these pills will help, but the side effects of the pills are, I mean, anyone who's seen a pharmaceutical commercial where they do the really fast talk and the side effects are, you know, diarrhea, bleeding from every orifice and muscle cramps or something.
An occasional sudden death.
Yeah, an occasional sudden death. So I think the pills should not probably be the first thing. I mean, sometimes in life-threatening situations, I get it, but...
Yeah, so I pushed back on it for a while, but then it's like, I'm still not figuring this out on my own. So they talked me into going to a nurse practitioner that prescribed. She interviewed me and said, well, what are your goals? What are your current experiences, this and that? And she goes, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to start you with one of the more mild drugs out there. Asked her a lot of critical questions. I'm a engineer by trade, so I like digging sure. into facts, context, statistics, you know, like yep. I do that with work, you know, you're doing some sort of road repair. Well, what, you know, grout patching product is the right one for a vertical application in a wet condition, you know, kind of like what Mike would do with being an electrician. You know, there's certain conductors, certain items for certain situations.
Well,
you know,
I mean, heck, like Mike does that even there. With a bowling ball, so I don't know that there's anything Mike exactly. doesn't do that with.
Well, we're both similar that way.
Yeah.
I don't know you well enough, Nate, yet. I have met you at Mike's wedding, but that's our extent of
yes.
interaction.
And it was a fun time, and that's enough to be said about that.
Where you also met your own Scott, too, by the way.
I know. I remember.
Yeah. You'll meet Scott again, too, when you come paddle fishing one of these years.
Yes. Yes. Hopefully this next year.
I'm going to take a puff on this thing again real quick here. But yeah, so... You know, I wound up, long story short, I'm on an SSRI medication. It's a more mild one. It's one of the ones where if you miss a day or two, it doesn't really affect you. And they go, if you quit a cold turkey for like a month, it's not going to like make you go crazy. You know what I mean?
Sure.
But my experience with that is that the pills are not the solution. But what they are, it's very similar to physical therapy. You know, say you have a sports injury and you have muscles that are damaged or something like that. They'll put you on painkillers or muscle relaxers and you'll do like an exercise. You know, work your knee, yep. work your thigh, whatever it is. Well, this is the same way. And I never thought of it that way before because no one's ever talked about it with me that way. But you take this drug, then you go into the counselor and you, whatever, you talk about things and you realize, okay, here's some coping skills, it's basically training or coaching really is how I look at it. You say, well, next time you run into this situation, try practicing this technique to get a better outcome. And I think for an adult, that's, I don't know, it's good. It's been a long road to get here, but you have your ups and downs. For every down, there's been a greater climb after on the backside of the down. So,
well, what's the saying? Without the valleys, the mountaintop isn't anything special. Something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
I know a lot of people don't have good kind of modeling or role models. You know, you have parents who do the best they can, but maybe they're modeling behaviors that aren't conducive to surviving in the modern world. You know, I mean, every generation faces new challenges and stuff, and reprogramming or kind of distancing yourself from the stuff you saw modeled that just doesn't work anymore. Maybe it never even worked then. So I know I certainly had
correct
some of that. I'll say some because I don't want it to be a long episode about me. but I had some of that from my childhood, and it took somebody else kind of saying, like, why are you like this? For me to look at reasons behind behaviors, I guess.
Yeah. And it's actually been, you know, I enjoy learning how like the fundamental fabric of the universe works. So learning how like the brain and the tricks it can play on you, how it functions, it helps you understand a lot of things and realize a lot of the people around you are equally fucking screwed up.
Yeah.
And some things have become way more clear to me. I go, oh, I know what that person's dealing with. I've been there. I get it. You know, until someone helps you climb out of the soup of, you know, if you're in this big pot of soup and you're drowning in it, you got to get halfway out of it before you realize kind of what you were going through to begin with.
Yeah.
But talking about evolution and all that, I think that's the thing that gets people in trouble now is, you know, a lot of the coping skills I had used in the past were I'm in stress, I'm in danger. I mean, whether it was physical danger or not, your body treats it like danger. So your response is put your head down, keep walking, just become more of a robot, go to like those base functions, which is great if you're fleeing a forest fire in the woods in 3000 BC, you know, just keep walking, the fire will,
yeah,
you'll walk out of the smoke eventually. But in the modern world, you don't, you know, the capitalism and all that, which is what a whole different discussion, but that you can't escape it.
Yeah. The corporatism, rampant consumerism, the social media, keeping up with the Joneses you don't even know, highlighting only the best parts of your life and not showing any of the struggle for relatability. You know, it's almost everywhere you look, there's comparison or people appearing to be doing better and not struggling at all. When if you would, you know, take a random Instagram post or snap of their life when they're not expecting it, to see them yelling at somebody or see them crying in their bathroom, or instead of, oh, here's the new car I just bought, or here's this crazy party I was invited to, or here's, you know, but what did that person have to do to get to that party besides go to Costco and buy that baby oil that Diddy likes so much?
Yeah, you know, I wish we had gotten some P. Diddy oil parties in college. We never did, I can recall. If we did, I was rupee'd apparently.
Yeah, I suppose in college you'd be kind of on the borderline, you know. Are you the participant or are you the victim?
Well, we knew some individuals in college that were perpetrators, I'll say that.
Sure. So your experience with the therapy was good. And the, I know we did some stats where something like, what was it, Mike, of all of the men that go to therapy who are feeling suicidal, 60% of them kill themselves still?
Yeah, the stat is really high. And the success rate is extremely high. So it's a very serious issue. I think women, they commit suicide at a higher rate, but they fail at a higher rate as well. Let's put it that way.
Women actually do. I always heard men were more successful at it because they're more determined.
Yeah, women commit suicide at a, or they attempt to commit suicide at a higher rate. Men succeed at committing suicide at a higher rate.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Well, that's good that you advocated for knowing what pills they wanted you to take and what pharmaceuticals they wanted you to take. So I think that's something that's kind of skipped over in our society.
No, and that was the most disappointing part, because the first answer is, here, take this. I'm like, oh, what's this? You know, but then at the same time, our culture goes, well, if you want to smoke some tobacco or some marijuana, that's bad. You know, we can create these chemicals in a lab, right? That's okay.
Yeah. If we give you lab meth for ADHD, that's better than just smoking meth off the street. For sure.
Well, I wouldn't smoke meth either way, I don't think.
But. No, me either. I'm just saying, like, they can sell you the same stuff in pill form. But if you want to do it recreationally as an adult, then it's criminal charges, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're one of the only countries or one of the few countries where the pharmaceutical companies can market directly to the end user, bypassing the doctors and stuff. So you get people going to the doctor asking for, oh, hey, I want that drug where that guy in the denim jacket throws the football through the tire swing. That's the drug I want.
Yeah, it's your own hometown hero, Minnesota Viking Brett Favre.
Yeah. Well, I'm from Wisconsin, but he was our hero first. And then he went to Minnesota and started sending dick pics and stuff. Like, come on, Minnesota. What are you doing?
Well, they had the party boat with, what was his name? Randy Moss, right?
Yep. Yep. Good old Randy Moss.
I haven't heard that name in a long
fine
time.
Tradition.
Yes, he was one of those big egos. Good when he wanted to be, though.
Well, yeah, he was a rock star, but he's also a freaking idiot.
Yeah.
Greatest ones are. The final thought I had on the whole thing was, until, you know, a few months ago, I had an idea of what depression was, and it wasn't accurate. You know, it was kind of strange to realize, no, my doctor says, you have depression. Okay. Then I realized, well, I've probably had this for a while. Oh, well, this is what it's like. You know, it's not this sadness or whatever. It's kind of more of a entire body response. You're literally like depressed, like someone put their hand on you and squished you down like a squishy foam earplug.
Sure.
And you're trying to like re-expand back to your natural shape and size. That's how I describe it. So For me, the big thing's been just fatigue and no desire to do a lot of things. You know, they give you skills to work on that, and it's been up and up since I started going to help. So it's all good. So now that I've understood it more, I'm more of an advocate, I think, for people I've run into. And, you know, I don't know what they're teaching kids in school these days, but at least what we learned in the early 90s in school did not prepare me for any of this as an actual adult. We learned PCP and meth were bad. And I don't know anybody that smoked PCP. So
I still don't know anybody that smokes PCP. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I did see online that if you adopt a retired drug dog, you can find new friends at parties really quickly.
We should try that.
So was it just being kind of like not satisfied in your job, or what kind of,
you know,
what feelings kind of led you to?
I got to the point where I couldn't function. I couldn't go to work. I was going to work late. When I was at work, I just wanted to be at home. When I was at home, I wanted to do nothing except sleep.
Yeah.
So basically, I let it get so bad that my life was total dysfunction right after New Year's this year. And that was the trigger. I'm like, I finally got to go do something. And it, because I was intimidated by it. I didn't know anybody that had done it or whatever. And it's actually not that bad.
When do you find that men are a little more tight-lipped about that sort of thing?
I think it depends who you know, huh? I mean,
yeah.
I didn't know anybody personally, you know, to discuss it with.
And it probably depends generationally, because we just watched, this is going to seem like it's very, very roundabout tangent, but I'm going to bring it back, I promise, as long as I can keep the thought in my head long enough. We just watched through the entirety of the Sopranos series. And of course, you know, Tony Soprano and there goes the therapy, but his sister, it's his uncle. And this is set in the 90s, this show. And his uncle, the main character's uncle, performs oral sex on women and likes doing it. And everybody found out about it in the 90s, or, you know, when this was set in the 90s. And he was like, if this ever gets out, it's gonna tank my reputation. You can't tell anybody about this. And, you know, now we have people that boast about eating ass on the internet.
Or on the back window of their trucks.
Yeah, that too.
For real. I've seen those stickers around town here in Bismarck.
Yeah. I suppose we probably don't want to talk about all of that stuff. But point is that, you know, in the 90s, for a man to perform oral sex on a female was reputation damaging. And now we've gone so far beyond that, it's crazy. But that was a different generation in the 90s and a different time. So I'm hoping that men being able to talk about their struggles and their issues becomes much more normal.
Yeah, the only other thing with it is I'm lucky to live in the town I live in, because I can get away and go to these appointments really easily. But, you know, like areas where Mike and I have lived, and maybe where people live now too, I don't know, but Western North Dakota, there's no healthcare, period. You might as well go to the freaking veterinarian, you know?
Sure.
So if I was still living in that town, I don't think I'd have access to any of this. And that's the real shame of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you live in a populated enough area and there's access to everything, but a lot of the smaller, more sparsely populated areas don't have the same access to any kind of medical or mental health care.
Nope. You know, that's really all I have on that as far as experiences. You know, the thing that was pretty interesting is you get into some TED Talks on YouTube or whatever, and like leadership, dealing with people, this mental health, it all kind of Venn diagrams together, crosses over quite a bit. And it's been really helpful for me as a current manager actually to learn some things myself the hard way. And it makes you a more effective leader too.
Yeah, for sure. I've read a lot of leadership type books and things, and kind of grew up in leadership through the Boy Scouts and Eagle Scout and all of that. But it's crazy how all of that is very, very similar. And I will say, as a parent of two small children, parenting and leadership and all of that stuff is very much intertwined. A lot of the parenting books I've read can also be applied in a workplace environment too, because it's, you know, as a true leader, you're trying to build people up and build character and develop them. And
correct. Yeah. You know, we had some difficult customers at work, and, you know, like I said, I'm not a doctor or whatever, but from what I've learned, I think the one individual was definitely a narcissist or had some of those tendencies. So the most helpful thing for me was understanding, you know, my condition, and then reading and listening to more about narcissism and understanding, so in that situation, I wasn't the bad guy. That guy just couldn't handle it and made me be the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, it gives you a little more strength to be assertive and not doubt yourself and question, you know, your own decisions, your own reality.
Yeah. And I guess at the end of the day, all you can control is yourself most of the time. I would I suppose. Not all of the time, but you can choose how you feel about things or choose how you react to certain things, which just going out to like a Costco on a weekend, a lot of people don't make any choices about how they act. So,
and then another thing I learned is, so the way the brain works physically, so you got the neurons. So they talk about habits and, you know, behaviors and all this. Well, the way the brain works, when repeated stimuli happen, you form neural pathways, they have a reaction to it, and those become habits. The neurons literally touch each other and make like a physical connection to shortcut an electrical signal, so the brain can process that information with less administrative work. So they use a term called executive function. So executive function is like saying, all right, today's Tuesday, I have an appointment at 10 o'clock, I'm going to drive there, right? You're executively thinking, versus like a habit is, I get up, I just brush my teeth, put my shoes on. You know, you don't think about it. But the way that works against you is when you're in a stressful environment and you kick into that survival mode, well, survival becomes your habit. So then to rise back out of that survival habit, you have to work really hard to do basic things like, you know, everyone has their different struggles, but the classic one you hear about is like doing your laundry versus leaving it laying in a big ass pile, you know?
Yeah.
So that's part of what your behavioral health part of it is creating new habits, new constructive habits.
Yeah. Have you read The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, I think?
No.
He kind of breaks down habits. I think it's into four steps. You've got like the trigger, the response, the feel good, and something else. So he talks about the different aspects of the habit that you can control if you're thinking about it and diligent about it. So if you get, you know, say stressed at work and normally you would reach for a donut or something and then you're overweight, that, you know, when you feel stressed, you have to recognize the trigger, and then you don't necessarily change the outcome, which is you eat food, but you would change the donut to carrots or something, or you would change that response to take a walk around the building. Or so I read that several years ago now, actually, but that was when I liked kind of breaking down what goes into a habit, because it's more than just, oh, I just do this because it's a random thing that I've just decided to do. It's not really a random thing. Like you said, it's a survival mechanism or coping mechanism or something.
Yeah, no, that sounds right in line with what I've read about too. And then, you know, we talk about these drugs and whatever, but another thing I wish they had taught us in school is probably the number one drug that we have access to is sugar and carbohydrates, because I don't get a draw to drink. I don't get a draw to smoke cigarettes or any of that. But that was my go-to when I'm stressed. It still is. I'm getting off of it, but it's grab those potato chips, grab that candy bar, because it's comforting. So to me, I'm more addicted to that stuff than I am nicotine or alcohol, you know?
Yeah. When they put sugar in everything and they put salt in everything too. But I read one of the greatest coups of all time was by processed sugar, and they convinced everybody that it was the fat content on the nutrition labels that led to childhood obesity and not the processed sugar and all the sodas and candy bars and stuff they were eating.
Well, yeah, you get a lot of candy bars now today, like Hot Tamales, Mike and Ike's, whatever, and they say fat free right there on the box.
Yeah.
So I was joking. It's fat free. It's good for you.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, and I don't know if you know this, is Tic Tacs are pure sugar. But in order to have sugar content, or to, they can be listed as sugar free if they have less than X number of grams of sugar in them. Well, the entire Tic Tac weighs less than that ruling. So even though it's pure sugar, they can still bill themselves as sugar free because it's less than however many grams of sugar where they need to disclose the sugar content or something.
Well, that's the American dream right there. Bureaucracy and lobbying.
Yeah. Put our sugar pill less than the legal reporting thing and rake in the profits. America.
You know, I don't know if Mike's still on here, but we had a lively conversation this fall when I visited about comparing our hit great history characters as drug dealers and pimps. And, you know, you think back to we're talking about colonial times, and what never occurred to me back a few months ago is that sugar plantations were a big part of colonization. And what was it other than a drug? You know, you go enslave people, grow this drug in the Americas and bring it back to Europe and Asia and whatever. And yeah, you know, we take it for granted now, but that would have been a huge manipulator for the people back then.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was the history of colonialism in the Western Hemisphere, was the pursuit of sugar and liquor and then tobacco. So imperialism on this side of the planet was entirely about those issues, you know.
You could include the fur trade too. Well, they only needed to sell furs so they could buy liquor, tobacco, and sugar, right, Mike?
Oh, yeah, that's essentially what they were doing.
And if you're far enough north to stay warm in the winter.
Well, of course.
Am I right in thinking, is tobacco native to America?
Yes,
or
it is.
Whatever. So they didn't have sugar, or they didn't have tobacco and sugar in Europe before.
They had sugar.
Quote, unquote.
They had sugar, but they didn't have tobacco.
Okay. I know they also didn't have the tomato, which is crazy because when you think of Italy, you think of pizza and pasta sauce and stuff like that. But they didn't have a tomato until coming to the New World. And not really the New World, but the previously discovered, but not by Europeans, world.
So, Jordan, this is related, and I didn't want to bring it up until we were ready. Do you think that the high rates of obesity and alcoholism in rural communities is due to their lack of access to healthcare, basically, mental health care? Because you you mentioned it, but we both lived the majority of our adult lives in extremely rural conditions, and yeah, if you're depressed, you know, you just drink your pain away or whatever. Like, that's what everybody does. So,
yeah, you look around, like, you know, just where I work in Bismarck is kind of a rougher neighborhood. And you see a lot of people that are on drugs walking through our parking lot. But yeah, a lot of the average people you look at and realize, like, I chain smoking cigarettes in the back of his, you know, or the driver's seat of his 98 Honda Civic. That guy is coping. His life is not good, more than likely. So that cigarette is the drug that keeps him going. And that's what they were designed to be, actually. Go back to the 1800s with, you know, machine-rolled cigarettes. And it was a drug to keep the working classes going, basically, metered out, you know, in small doses.
I know in World War II, they made sure it was part of the rations because a soldier that could smoke cigarettes could watch their buddy's head get blown off, smoke a pack, and continue to fight. At least that was the thinking.
Well, yeah. What else did they put in rations? They put in chocolate bars, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
So, and I know back in the pirate times or golden age of sea exploration, I think rum was part of the rations. They each had a serving of rum allocated to them per day.
Well, yeah. They had water issues then, too. I don't know how much that played a role. They drank a lot more alcohol there. Then.
I think people lived off of the alcohol back a long time ago. Not like we do today where we drink hard, but I think you're low dose on alcohol all day, every day.
Yeah, I got to maintain.
So are we halfway through the cigar, gentlemen?
Oh, I think so, Mike.
So what do you think, Jordan?
It's very smooth. I like the sensation on the tip of my tongue. It's kind of like it's trying to be bitter, but it's not. So it's good. I like it. Decent. Yeah.
What do you think, Nate?
So far, I like it. I've been smoking it pretty consistently. I don't know. When you said bitter, I was thinking about the tip of my tongue and not in relation to the tip of your tongue, Jordan. So don't misunderstand me. But there is definite, I want to call it a spice, Mike. We've already proven that my taste buds are not really the greatest on this show. So I like it. I think it tastes more spicy to me than bitter. It's not overly spicy, but there is a definite lingering tip of tongue taste, which is not unpleasant in my opinion.
I would call it like a tang almost. Like it's not quite a spiciness, but it's like tangy. A pleasant tangy, but it is very mellow. Full, kind of got a fuller smoke to it, but mellow.
Yeah, it certainly has some really nice looking smoke coming off of it. Sometimes we get those cigars that have like the regular amount of smoke, but like the Nika Rustica is one of them that I remember as being, it's got the smoke, you know? So when you watch those cartoons of cartoon characters smoking cigars and the whole room fills up with smoke, like that's the amount of smoke coming off of, not that amount of smoke coming off of this one, but this one is smokier than the standard.
I would agree with that. It's above average for sure.
Sorry, I was informed that I was making the garage stink too bad, so I'd open the door.
Well, you got to do what I did and put a bathroom fan and pipe it out the side of your garage.
You know, that's maybe our next topic. So I'm a new cigar aficionado. I've always enjoyed one here or there, but Mike's been pushing me for years to get into it. I finally did. And I'm looking at winter going, I don't want to stop smoking, but I don't want to go outside. But I do not want to smoke indoors either.
Yeah. Well, Mike, and you know what Mike has. He's got the patio thing or deck or I don't know, porch. I get confused because I don't talk to a lot of people from my small town. And like my grandma was like, oh, yeah, go sit on the Davenport. I'm like, I don't know what that is, Grandma. But it's a sofa. And I didn't want to do that either because season one, I was sitting outside on our, like just outside on our patio. And if it was windy, then my audio was bad. And if it was cold, I was like all bundled up. And then I was like, oh, it'd be great to smoke in the garage. So I looked up, a bunch of stuff, and there's a lot of people that want to smoke inside and they have offices inside their house and they want to put in some kind of ventilation system, but I wasn't about to do it in the house. So I got a bathroom fan and installed it right above my workbench where I am sitting right now and where I sit to record. And my garage isn't insulated, but I have one of those oil heater radiator type things that you plug in. And so in the winter, I turn that on in the morning and it heats up the garage to, I don't know, probably 50 degrees maybe. So it's tolerable. But what I've done in the winter, what I smoke in the winter mostly is a pipe because it's quicker. It doesn't require as much length, I guess, of time. You can bundle up more and hold the pipe and not worry about burning your gloves. Whereas with a cigar, when you get down to the bottom, you know, it can get hot on your fingers. And if you don't have your fingers bare, which in the winter here you don't, you might not know. So I kind of do the pipe. But if we're recording, I'll come out and do it in the garage. At least it's out of the wind, even though it's not insulated. But if you have an insulated garage, you could put in a bathroom fan quite easily.
Yeah, that's an idea. Think about it.
I don't know if you have any cigar lounges.
You know, I'm not sure that we do in this town.
you pay a little more. Well, because we've got a cigar lounge just not too far from where I live, and you can go and smoke in there. And I've only went in there to smoke once, but you have to buy what you're going to smoke in there, so you can't bring something from home to smoke, which is fine and it makes sense. But I mean, that's
actually
another option.
We do have one. I was at a bar and this drunk guy was saying, do you like smoking outside in the patio area, enjoying a couple brews in July? And he goes, yeah, there's a cigar bar, but you got to buy bourbon with it too. And I go, yeah, that, I don't know. I'd be in the right mood for that.
I mean, you don't have to sell me. Good. I already like cigars and bourbon. I can drink where I can smoke cigars. Oh, okay.
So that could be a whole new realm.
It's a classic pairing. I don't do it a lot, especially not on the show, because I also have to edit the show later. And if I get on a drunk rambling tangent, Mike knows.
Oh, yes. We have excerpts or however you want to say it.
Hours. Hours.
Yeah. Hours and hours.
Of excised audio.
Yeah. I did pair the cigar with bourbon today. It's actually straight rye. So
nice.
I am doing it rightly.
Yes. I'm pairing mine with a Bell's Oberon Eclipse, which is a citrus wheat.
I'm drinking a Coca-Cola in a glass with cubes.
Nice. Have you tried root beer with a cigar?
No, I have. I have, and it's good.
It's quite nice. It's quite nice.
Root beer with some bourbon in it is also...
well, too.
Also very good.
I'm trying to help somebody out who doesn't drink a whole lot or doesn't want to maybe drink all the time. And maybe not just specifically you, Jordan, but any listener, you know, you don't have to be consuming alcohol to enjoy cigars, which our show definitely doesn't give that impression because we're always drinking beer or some kind of cocktail. But you can totally enjoy cigars. Root beer and Dr. Pepper, I've heard Dr. Pepper's good. I haven't tried Dr. Pepper with a cigar, mostly because I feel like the Dr. Pepper taste would be a little overpowering, but people like it, so it must work.
My personal favorite is very dark coffee. I like to drink a very dark coffee with a cigar, but I don't on the show because we're doing it at night and I want to go to sleep. So
you do tea sometimes too, though, Mike.
I do tea. Yeah. Yeah. Tea doesn't have enough caffeine to like keep me awake, but coffee definitely does.
I have realized I have a palate for coffee, and cigars and coffee or tobacco and coffee have a very similar profile on the tongue, I think. So I think they go well together.
Yes. Yes. I would say I have a third left, and I am getting a little sourness in there, unfortunately.
Are you?
Yeah, I think I might be smoking it too fast.
I have removed all my wrappers at this point.
Yeah, I've taken my wrappers off as well. I like the wrapper on this one. It's quite nice.
The packaging was very nice.
Yeah, I just took another puff, Mike, and I can taste the beginnings of some kind of sourness if smoked too quickly, I feel like if I slow down, it'll likely be okay.
You know, Mike, you asked that question earlier about drinking as a coping mechanism. I can see how some of these war veterans, people like that, became just terrible, terrible drunks, because there were days where I had kind of a severe, like, physical anxiety danger reaction. And I didn't drink a cocktail to cope with that, but it was like a Friday night. And when I took a sip of that liquor drink, and those feelings go away. So I can understand how someone that experiences that all the time becomes a drunk. I can't explain it.
Oh, it's understandable for sure.
And the feeling I'm talking about is like, say you had a close call, almost had a car accident, something like that, and you can feel your hands and your toes tingling and shaking, that feeling. Well, your nervous system is all screwed up and dysregulated, that feeling will come on unprovoked. You'll be sitting at home in your chair and you'll start feeling it. So I can see someone that had a more severe experience feeling that all the time. And liquor does make it go away. It soothes it. Well, on a different topic, do you guys in Minnesota have any crazy races or like measures, laws that are on the ballot?
Not this year. Not that I'm aware of. One interesting thing I've noticed in rural Minnesota is we're getting the same phenomenon we had in 16, where people with Democratic yard signs also have a Trump sign. So I don't know if that's a sign of anything, but it's common. I even saw a yard 2 weeks ago where somebody had a Waltz Flanagan sign and a Trump sign in the same yard. So it's definitely unique in our state right now.
Democrats don't exist in North Dakota. So
you guys have anything wild there?
The Harris Walls. You know, there's like the Trump people and Ukraine people and Trump flags, Joe Biden, or no, let's go Brandon flags everywhere. I mean, you'll see these guys with like $2 billion houses and beautiful yards and nice vehicles and all this, and they'll say, fuck Joe Biden on there. And they'll go, your life is so tough. Yeah, he really ruined it for you, buddy. I don't know how you're... You know what I mean?
Yeah, how can you cope crying into stacks of $100 bills?
I can understand the attraction for somebody living, you know, a very, very simple life, you know, kind of like what maybe Mike or I lived in the oil patch, even like what we do now, which isn't bad. We get by just fine. But I can understand someone like us maybe feeling that way. But man, I see a lot of people in Bismarck that are really well off just flaunting it. It's a unique thing for here, like hyper-conservatism, like, I don't know, you can even call it fascism. I don't know if that's correct, but...
Yeah, I don't know if it's fascism or idol worship or something.
It happens here, too. You drive past these million-dollar homes on lakes, and they'll have some crazy borderline offensive flag flying from their flagpole. And it's like, dude, calm down. You're getting way too excited about this.
When you say offensive flags, are you talking about the Police Lives Matter flag, Mike?
Yeah, it would be... some version of the police flag or like a fuck Joe Biden flag. There's a lot of those, you know, the FJBs. And then you'll see these neighbors that are battling with their yard signs. And it's like, you guys need a different hobby for sure.
Yeah, I've seen people that they have the liberal sign where it's like, this house believes in, you know, love is love and blah, 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 blah. And then you've got the neighbor across the street that has like, well, this house believes that love is between a man and a woman and God set forth this, that, the other thing. And it's very petty.
I like the, I've never done it, but I like some of the stupid like gun show signs. Like, we don't dial 911, we dial 1911. But if I had one of those, I'd put it like in my reloading room, my garage, you know?
Yeah. Or the ones where it says like, due to the increased price of ammunition, there will be no warning shot.
Yeah. That's a boomer classic right there.
Yeah.
My brother has a neighbor. My brother lives on the Mississippi River. So it's a nice neighborhood, right? And he's got a neighbor that has a massive cross permanently built into the siding of his house. And then in front of it, he also has an AR-15 flag and a Trump flag.
How do you know he's not running a church out of his home?
Yeah, I suppose he could. I mean, it's a pretty nice place. But who the hell would put a permanent wooden cross built into the siding on the side of their house? Like, who's going to buy that?
One of my favorite things I've seen is people or, you know, comic artists imagining Jesus coming back and saying something along the lines of, wait, you worship what? Implying like that's the thing he died on. Like, why are you worshiping?
Or
like worshiping the thing he, you know, the worst day of his life, I guess, right? Being crucified. I don't know if that was the worst day of his life. I have no idea. I don't fully believe that he actually existed as presented by the church, but I'm also an atheist, so it doesn't really matter what I believe.
Well, poor state of his life is probably when he didn't pass his multiplication tables at school and the nun had to slap him with a ruler.
Yeah, fuck those nuns, though, right? Then he went on to flip tables and whip people with a whip, you know?
You know, that's probably the only based thing that Jesus ever did that I can recall.
Well, that and turning water into wine. I mean, that's like the ultimate Chad move, right? Don't worry, guys. Just order water here. I got it.
I know I'd invite Jesus to the paddle fishing island so we could turn one paddlefish into 60 so we could all fill our tags and be done.
Oh, that drunk Scott would be, he would die. He wouldn't make it out alive.
Yeah, he didn't. He'd never get out of the chair.
He'd fall through the chair. So I guess I'll cap it off with that. You know, I went out. He hosted me down in Wyoming in the National Forest for elk hunt. Long story short, I never saw one, never filled my tag. It was a pretty slow year, hunted for 4 days. But, you know, Scott and I, we just kicked back of the camper most of the time and BS with people. And it was paddle fishing in a different environment. That's just how he is.
Too bad you didn't get one.
No, I was surprised how thick the woods are there. And I suppose in Minnesota, you're probably used to thick trees, but it's like the opposite of where I live. I mean, there's patches of trees, the wide open sky, and there it's like thick, thick, thick coniferous timber and occasional patches of clearings.
Got a sickness for the thickness.
Yeah.
I remember moving back to Minnesota. I felt claustrophobic for probably 3-4 months just because I wasn't used to having driving down the roads and having the trees enclose you and all that. I had the same feeling, but the opposite when I first moved to North Dakota. I moved to Jamestown and it was just so flat. And it was kind of anxiety inducing for sure. It's like the first night I came out to your parents' house, I had a little bit of anxiety because I'd never been to such a remote location before in my life.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. And see, growing up, that's all I knew for a long time.
Yeah, I spent 5 years in... Oh, you go on, Jordan.
Oh, I was just saying when I was a kid, I was by myself mostly. So, yeah, it was just me and the world and cows and cats and horses. Those are my friends. So yeah,
I spent 5 years in Oklahoma and they have zero trees. And while their winter temperatures aren't the same as here, it felt almost colder because there was way more wind than I was prepared for because there were no trees to kind of stop it.
Yeah, the first probably year I moved back to Minnesota, I didn't feel any wind on my skin at all.
Yeah.
Because North Dakota is so windy year round that the 10 mile an hour winds that we get here just weren't enough to be like, oh yeah, it's windy.
Yeah. I do want to say, Mike and Jordan, my cigar is getting quite sour and not pleasant. Has yours changed from the sourness?
Mine's reaching its end.
Yeah. What about you, Mike?
I have 2 inches left, and it's sour, but I'm washing away the sourness with a little bit of whiskey, and it's fine. It does have a deeper note to it, but if I didn't have the whiskey to wash away that sour note, I don't think I'd like it very much at all.
Yeah, and I've got 2 inches left as well, and I'm just drinking beer, and it's not quite enough to get the sour out.
So I've noticed with cigars is a phenomenon. Maybe you guys have as well. When you get towards the end and I suck on it, it makes my lips tingle. And that's usually about when I say, you know what, I probably enjoyed it as far as it's going to be enjoyed.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it depends on the nicotine content for my lips to tingle. That's phrased oddly, but we're going to roll with it. Because there have certainly been cigars we smoked on the show where we smoked until like our fingers were getting so hot that we just had to put it out for safety reasons. We would have smoked it all up if we could have. And then there's other ones where the flavor, like for this one, and the Gurkhas are kind of notorious for being very sour in the last few inches, you know, 2 or 1.5 inches or something like that. So I think it depends on the cigar. And I don't know, Mike, if it is more indicative or more if it happens more frequently with the bigger gauge cigars or the longer cigars. So this is a Toro, which is longer than what we normally smoke.
I think so. Yeah, it's the length of the cigar because you're filtering all that tobacco into the last bit. So we usually smoke Robustos, and they rarely turn sour because you're only smoking a 5-inch long cigar. And so you never build up enough of that tar and everything to make it turn sour. Rarely, if it's a good cigar, high-quality cigar. I think it's more prevalent on like a medium and a lighter cigar. So this is a really medium-bodied cigar. I think they're more prone to turn sour. That's what I've noticed. I don't think it's a scientific fact or anything.
Yeah. Well, and we're also smoking within a certain budget. So if we spent 2, 3, 4, 5 times what this one cost for the same size cigar, would it turn sour at the end?
I mean, I would hope that if you spent $30 on a cigar, that it wouldn't be sour in the last 2 inches. Yeah, this is, you can get these for $7 a cigar or so right now online. So it is in that $13 price range from a cigar lounge. So it should be good for sure. It should be good.
Yeah, and I enjoyed it until probably the last 3 inches is when I kind of started noticing the...
Yeah, that's halfway, you know, that's... To me, that's not good enough, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, a sensation I notice is kind of like if you sip bourbon or whatever, your lips kind of just, I get a sensation from it. But once I stop drawing on it, then I don't feel it anymore.
So, Jordan, we rank the cigars on a 5-point scale. We've had a couple cigars get 6s and 7s, so you can go above a 5 if you really want. A 3 would be just a standard, not special, average cigar that has a limited recommendation, whereas a 4 is a really good solid stick. A 5 would be something that's really good, it's a really good stick. A 1 is the worst we've ever rated anything, and that's like disgusting. So what would you rate the cigar as?
Given my limited experience, I'd call this a 4. I don't know that I've ever had a 5. This is probably a 5 for me, but I guarantee there's better out there. So I'll call it a 4. Better than average.
So Nate rated it. I'm going to re-rate it because we are steal the other guys rating the show.
Well, here's the funny thing, Mike, is in my head, I was thinking 2.75. And then I saw you rated a 3, and I was tempted to go 3, but I was like, if it's a 3, I should be able to smoke the whole thing. Like a dark shark is a 3 because I can smoke the whole thing down without it getting sour. And I just kind of felt like the presentation on this one, I mean, yeah, okay, so a lot of this stuff is subjective, but I don't, a 92 from Cigar Aficionado is, I mean, that's a bit much. Like this should have been, I should have smoked it until my fingers burned, the flesh burned and peeled back from my bone at a 92 out of 100.
I agree. And I initially put it as a 3 because it did have a good start, but you convinced me with your 2.75. I'm like, well, hold on a second. I should be able to smoke the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like I shouldn't be like, oh, this last 2 inches is just wretched. And have to force myself to smoke it. Oh,
I gotta drink a lot more whiskey to get through this cigar. That's a different kind of coping mechanism, I think, Mike.
Yeah, I'm drinking a very, very nice whiskey. It's a Vikra Straight Rye Whiskey with the Temperance River. And it's like making a bearable, and the whiskey's like delightful. I'm like supplementing this shit cigar with the whiskey, you know? It's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
So I changed mine to a 2.75 as well, just because it's not... I can't even recommend it. I cannot recommend getting this cigar.
No. I mean, the first part of it was good, but really only the first half. And for $7, you know, you could get something else that you could smoke all the way through.
Well, yeah, you can get a Series R all day for the same price as one of these.
Yeah. Or a nub, right? You could get nubs or a nub. For that.
Yeah. You can get you nubs get a for nub half
Cameroon.
This price.
Yeah. You get a nub Cameroon. And knock yourself out with that.
I've had those. Those are good.
Yeah.
I'd agree with you. Those are a better cigar than this one. So given that, I move it down to a 3.
All right. I will change Jordan's. You're going to change it, Nate? Tile. There we go. All right. We changed it to a 3 just for fairness.
We started keeping track of guest ratings too by request of one of our guests. So I don't know what we're going to do with all this data.
Well, it's like Top Gear. You got to start a moderately priced car.
Yep.
It is. Yeah. So we have a limit. I have a limit of $5. I try to get every cigar for $5 or less. And so I shop deals, obviously, for something like this. I did get them for less than five. You know what? I think I did spend more than $5 a cigar for these. I think I added them on because I saw that they were come out as 92 and I could add the pack for like $7 a stick or something. So I do believe I did spend $7 a stick on these. But
well, if you only smoke a quarter inch of these, all Cigar Aficionado rating testers, then a 92 makes sense. But that's not what we're about here on Nice Ashes. We smoke the whole damn thing.
Dick or all.
You know, I've experienced it with wine, too. I bought a wine at Costco, a Cab Sauv, and it was a Wine Enthusiast 92. And it wasn't bad, but I think it's the same reaction you guys are having with this one. I was like, it's not that great. But it was cheap, too. And it was like a $5 bottle of wine.
Yeah.
Yes. So if we are all done with the cigar, that means it's the end of the episode.
That is correct. It was great having you on, Jordan, and I look forward to hanging out with you again in the future.
Well, I appreciate the invitation, and it's a good time to enjoy a cigar with some company, well, even though it was virtual company. Can't go wrong.
Yeah, all company counts, right? And it's still, it was warm here today, so that was good. We're not shivering yet, so.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan, for coming on. I was really looking forward to it. Having two of my good buddies on the show at the same time, I was looking forward to it a lot. So thank you for coming. I gave you this cigar during paddle fishing, didn't I? This has been in the works for a while.
Yeah, that was in May. Yep.
Yeah, yep.
May 1st.
Well, the best laid plans finally came to fruition.
That's right. We're going to have a nice Ashes meetup at the at the peninsula this year.
We'll convert everybody.
Yep, looking for everybody.
That sounds amazing.
All right, thanks for thanks for listening. I'm thinking about fish. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. If you don't know what a paddlefish is, look it up, and we'll catch you next week.
Be safe. Have fun.